text the pilots from the outsourcing of jobs. Northwest had requested that a bankruptcy court throw out the contracts of any unions not meeting concession demands. The pilots had threatened to strike if that happened. The flight attendants are scheduled to vote on their contract June 6, and baggage handlers, represented by the International Association of Machinists, are still working out a labor deal.
The United Auto Workers Union has called for a strike vote at Delphi. UAW Delphi locals will complete the vote by May 14th. On May 9th, the bankruptcy judge is scheduled to rule on a motion by Delphi that would give the giant auto parts company the power to throw out its own union contracts rather than having the court make that decision. The UAW and other Delphi unions have said all along that if their contracts are destroyed in the bankruptcy process, a strike is likely, and that could be catastrophic for Delphi and for General Motors. The UAW says what Delphi wants here is illegal. Delphi is pressing its 33,000 union U.S. workers for steep wage and benefits cuts. Delphi is pressing its 33,000 U.S. workers for steep wage and benefits cuts as the workers and their unions try to defend prevailing wages and benefits.
Air Jamaica could be heading for a strike as the airline's more than 300 flight attendants have rejected the most recent contract offer from the airline. Last week, the flight attendants voted that the Bustamante Industrial Trade Union, which represents them, could strike if an agreement with the airline over wages could not be reached. The two sides have been in contract negotiations since last year.
We're here discussing child development with some experts. Tell me the normal development of, say, a two-year-old.
My truck.
So a child that age should know 2 to 4 word phrases. Good. And what about cognitive development? Ah, engaging in pretend play. I see. And what of social
development? Look, Anna!
Being enthusiastic about the company of other children. All right, thank you.
It's time to change how we view a child's growth.
Welcome.
It's not just physical. There are milestones your child should reach in how he plays, learns, speaks, and acts. A delay in any of these areas could be a sign of a developmental problem, even autism. The good news is, the earlier it's recognized, the more you can do to help your child reach his full potential. Talk with a doctor. Visit cdc.gov/act early or call 1-800-CDC-INFO. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Learn the signs. Act early.
Here is today's economic report. If a full-time stay-at-home mother was paid for all of her work, how much should she be paid? A study released by Salary.com on Wednesday suggests $134,121. The survey compiled a list of 10 jobs that most closely fit the role of a mother, including housekeeper, cook, janitor, and psychologist. The average salaries of those jobs were then calculated into the average 91.6 hours per week stay-at-home mothers said they spent working. The most recent U.S. Census reported 5.6 million women playing the role of stay-at-home mom with children under the age of 15.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, good evening. It may seem like the start of the Thursday night edition of Head On, and it more or less is, but actually this is hour number 4 for Thursday for Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Glad you could join me this evening. Tickled to death to be with you. Wherever you are and whatever you're thinking, is you're welcome to bring it to the table tonight. You know how it goes. You just heard the phone number. You know the email address, bob@headonradio.com. Can't wait to see where the evening takes us, because the afternoon, or at least the afternoon for me and for East Coast folks, and, yeah, well, you know how it is on the West Coast. The afternoon was most scintillating. A head-on showcase, if you will, a head-on forum, perhaps, with our good friend Bruce Birch, live at the Raleigh County Beckley Business Expo. at the Raleigh County Armory there in beautiful, beautiful Beckley. Joined by a dear friend, Dr. Bill O'Brien. If you missed the program, you missed something wonderful. But you can always pick it up at the archives at whiterosesociety.org. Look under Bob Kincaid. It'll be right there. That's at least my understanding. We had a lot of fun. We covered a lot of ground, but that doesn't mean that there's not ground to be covered tonight or this afternoon. Yeah, let's see. Still this afternoon, even here in the low toe hills of the Appalachian Range in the Shoals area of Alabama. This afternoon, plenty of stuff yet to cover. Interesting stuff coming. The snow job has begun. There's a memo that has been leaked, and it's beautiful. I'm half tempted to just read all three miserable pages of it. Tony Snow's first memo. It's just gorgeous. Among other look, I have some very happy news. I'll share it with you as well as sharing it with Agnes, because this is going to be life-changing. I just got an email. It says, notification of bequest. On behalf of the trustees and executor of the estate of late Enger, E-N-G-R, late engineer Martins Wilczek, I once again try to notify you, as my earlier letter was returned undelivered. I hereby attempt to reach you again by this same email address on the will. I wish to notify you that the late engineer Martins Wilczek made you a beneficiary to his will. He left the sum of $5,100,000 to you in the codicil and last testament to his will. This may sound strange and unbelievable to you, but it is real and true. Being a widely traveled man, he must have been in contact with you in the past, or simply you were nominated to him by one of his numerous friends abroad who wished you good. Engineer Martins Wilczek, until his death, was a member of the Helicopter Society and the Institute of Electronic and Electrical Engineers. He was a very dedicated Christian who loved to get out. His great philanthropy earned him numerous awards during his lifetime. Late Engineer Martins Wilczek died on the 13th of December, 2004, at the age of 80 years, and his will is now ready for execution. You want fries with that? According to him, this money is to support your humanitarian activities. Well, finally. You know, if you have patience and you have hard work and you try to live in a virtuous fashion, your humanitarian activities will eventually be noticed, and they were noticed by Engineer Martins Wilczek in 2004, who, in addition to being a very kind and philanthropic man, was apparently prophetic. According to him, this money is to support your humanitarian activities and to help the poor and the needy in our society. Well, it's a threefer. Poor, needy, and humanitarian. I'm it! Please, if I reach you, as I am hopeful, endeavor to get back to me as soon as possible to enable me to conclude my job. I hope to hear from you in no distant time through this. And yours in service, Barrister Barry Douglas, Esquire. Hey, Agnes. Baby, we're rich. I don't know. What are we going to buy first? Now, of course, you understand this is another one of those Nigerian 419 schemes. I did some reading about it not too long back. As it turns out, the Nigerian letter started out in the late 80s even earlier than that, by mail, and then started on fax machines, and then, the Internet came along, and everything got so much more simplified. It turns out that when the Nigerian economy went bust, a whole bunch of government officials were thrown out of work, and that included some lawyers and so forth. And the main proprietors of the 419 schemes, which is named after the law in Nigeria that makes these things illegal, the 419 schemes were perpetrated mainly by lawyers and businessmen who had seen their otherwise comfortable ways of life vanish in the economic bust in Nigeria. So I don't know. I'm sorry, Agnes. I doubt if there's going to be any portion of $5,100,000 coming to us from Engineer Martins Wilczek. He must have been a hell of a guy, though. Must have been a hell of a guy. I mean, I make a lot of jokes about these things, but this is living proof of Fields' Law Number One. Great, late, great W.C. Fields, who said, "You cannot cheat an honest man." And you can't. Because, and by virtue of the level of honesty that I possess, which I think is substantial, I can look at this and it all just looks so good, and all I've got to do is email BarryDGLS77@netscape.net, and then the fun would really start. Now, someday when we're a real live journalistic organization, we can do little micro miniaturized cameras and miniaturized sound recording devices that couldn't be found by, you know, thugs in Nigeria, and we can track Bill Zeck, died that 13th day of December 2004, aged 80 years. Not quite a year and a half, well, we're ready to execute his will. You see, it would be so easy to buy into this kind of thing. It would be so easy to believe that somebody out there, by virtue of just the dumb luck, miraculous hand of God acting on behalf of the good and the decent, directed some of Martin Wilczek's money to somebody who really, really, really needs it. But it doesn't work that way, does it? There ain't no such thing as a free lunch, is there? If you are willing to believe that there are people out there who just want you to have money, and all you've got to do is show a little faith, a little belief, then you are the patsy that they are looking for. Fortunately, in this audience, I know that everyone recognizes a con for the most part when they see one. We've missed a couple along the way. We've failed to recognize that the so-called immigration debate is a con for the ages. We missed that one. We didn't miss gay marriage. We didn't miss the con that was, they're going to take the Bibles. They're going to take you. John Kerry going to get your Bible. Remember the flyer that was sent to Arkansas and West Virginia? And a sublime manifestation of the Republican Party's convictions about the intelligence of the people who lived in those two wonderful states? Sure. But the reason I bring all of this up, apart from just having a little bit of fun, is to point out that this kind of thing is the same sort of thing that suckers in Republican voters by the train car load. We're going to return America to traditional family values, where the queers can't get married, and the Bible is read on every street corner. It's hooey. It's crap. It's a con. It's a joke. It's a ruse. It's dishonest, and it's heartbreaking. And it has led millions and millions and millions of American citizens who went to the polls and said, "I'm going to vote for George Bush. He's gonna bring traditional moral values back to the White House, and he's going to bring honesty and integrity." And they go to the gas pumps, and they shell out $3 a gallon, and they find out what integrity costs when you turn the most powerful nation in the world over to a common street criminal. And in a way, it is very, very sad to think that so many of my fellow Americans and your fellow Americans can be taken in by that kind of
common garbage. So that's just a starting place. That's where we'll get going from this evening. And I can't wait to hear what you've got to say. The phone number, of course, is 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. As we approach this break and Agnes gets the music going, think about what might be on your mind this evening. You can email whatever's on your mind as well to bob@headonradio.com. Learn them, know them, use them. It's Thursday night, and this is the Head On Radio Network.
Fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible. A cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
It's 20 minutes past the hour as we cruise into this first hour of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, and
Let's go straight to the phones. Jim has joined us. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
Hello, good evening. How are you?
I'm fine. Yourself?
I could barely hear you there. It was like a faint echo. But anyway, it's fine now. First, today's show at the Armory was very good. It was extremely pleasant to hear Dr. O'Brien's voice on the airwaves again. And, you know, I have never heard a negative thing about that man. And I've always heard good things about him. And he has borne himself with in a manner which brings a great amount of credit upon his professional and personal character. He really has.
And it does, and I think he enjoyed himself very much today, Jim.
And, you know, this town's kind of like Mayberry. If somebody breaks wind in the wrong direction, you go hear about it. And I've never heard a negative thing about that man. Nothing. Nothing but good. And, you know, I was just glad to hear him because he was truly a voice of reason in the afternoon, particularly after that trash they've got on in the morning show. We know when that will go nameless. But speaking of trash, I think I saw some trash get burned this afternoon.
How so?
Well, did you see Rumsfeld in his little encounter with that person in, I think maybe it was Atlanta or someplace, and he called Rumsfeld a liar?
No, do tell me about it, please.
He just let Rumsfeld have it and just pointed right out to him in chapter and verse what he had said. And it was completely, in contravention of what Rumsfeld had said later and tried to get rid of. And Rumsfeld, and you can see the look on his face, that he was basically, he looked like a jackrabbit caught in the headlights of a car. And at one point, they were going to have the man ejected. And Rumsfeld said, no, don't do that. And the guy said, I would hope not, sir. This is America, you know. I mean,
wow.
These people were going to take this guy out of there just like Saddam was going to have some of his people taken out when he made that speech with him. He had the big cigar. You know, we've seen the videotape.
Yeah, interesting you should make that comparison. I think we're dealing with the same mindset.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, when I saw Rumsfeld giving Saddam his golden spurs back in 1983 for his white horse, I mean, I thought those two, they, you know, kiss and kin, you know, basically just men who understood each other, who could look into each other's souls, basically.
Exactly.
But Rumsfeld basically met his Waterloo this afternoon, and he could not, in spite of his collar pin and his impeccable grooming, whatever, if you want to call it that. That collar pin, somehow, I tried to wear them, but God knows those things are uncomfortable. But he seems to thrive.
Yes, they are.
But he probably,
they absolutely are.
He probably has one of those mesh things around his thigh. Who knows? Who could care? Or maybe he's got on a one of those garter belts. I could care less what this other fish has got on. But,
oh, Jesus, Jim, you're taking me places I don't want to go.
Well, I mean, you know. People like that have strange quirks, and, you know, maybe that's how, maybe he goes to Victoria's Secret for his undergarments. But I'll tell you one thing right now. Victoria had no secret this afternoon when he got nailed, because he basically looked just like a jackrabbit caught in the headlights of a car. And it's the first time I've seen him come unglued. And it was about all the lies that have led us into this mess that we're in Southwest Asia and Iraq.
And he couldn't quite bluster his way out of it.
No,
this
he
time.
Could not. No. You know, normally he, you know, he'll intimidate people and, you know, he'll browbeat them. But he couldn't do this guy. I mean, this guy was just like a badger. I mean, he had his claws into Rumsfeld's ass and he would not let go. And I just loved it.
Where did you catch it? C-SPAN? CNN? What?
CNN. Wolf Blitzer talking about it. I mean, you know, they were going at it, and they were actually, and they had, you know, quotations from Rumsfeld back in 2003 about things, about WMDs, and said they were, and said they weren't, and he was trying to lie his way out of that. But, I mean, he said they were. Now he says they aren't, and then he says he never said they were, and, you know.
Well, that tactic worked for quite some time, Jim. You'd catch this gang in a lie, and you'd call them on it. I never said that. Look, and the mainstream media would sit there and go, "That's right, he never said it. These are not the droids he was looking for."
Bob, these a-holes, ever since they've been in power, have been on one tremendous Mardi Gras. You know what? They've had one big, fat, Shrove Tuesday pancake supper at the expense of the American taxpayer. And the motto of that administration, as far as fiscal irresponsibility, has been like somebody on the streets of New Orleans during Mardi Gras. Laissez bon temps rouler. Let the good times roll. But guess what comes after Shrove Tuesday? Ash Wednesday.
Ash Wednesday, that's right.
And it's time for
it's time for a little expiation.
And that's exactly what I saw this afternoon. You know, it was just something that I could not believe. And I just I just thought to myself, well, at last, you know.
I'm guessing this is going to come up on either Crooks and Liars or maybe MediaMatters.org or something. I'll have to see if we can come, and you know, somebody out there in the chat room or in the general listening audience may already know where it is and can send Agnes a link to it, agnes@headonradio.com, and we may be able to get it out there for folks who didn't get to catch it the first time around, Jim.
Well, all I can say is this. If it didn't happen, then I'm going to have to go back to my doctor and have my prescription changed. But I swear to God, either if I didn't see it actually, I had one hell of a nice hallucination. But it wasn't that. I mean, you know.
Well, you know, you don't want the hallucinations when they start coming unbidden.
Well, sometimes you do, Bob. You know, sometimes they just come upon you when you least expect them, and they're okay. You just kind of just get into them. But this was no hallucination. I saw this afternoon. And like I say, these people have just been on one gigantic spree of all types of irresponsibility that has cost this country so much in terms of its reputation, its blood, its treasure, everything. And it's time for a day of atonement to be. And it's time for a day of reconciliation, and it's time for a day of judgment to come. That's all.
Well, I hope that day is near, Jim. I truly do. I haven't understood for several years now why there weren't a couple of million people in front of the White House demanding this entire criminal enterprise be ejected. But you know, I'm crazy that way.
Have you ever thought of this? Now, I just finished last week the Goebbels Diaries. I've read those books before. I read them in graduate school. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And Hitler's propaganda minister. And, you know, he basically promulgated the big lie. And he said, don't tell little lies, because when people tell little lies every day, they get caught in them. But he said, if you're going to tell a lie, tell it big enough and broad enough.
Make it a whopper.
That nobody could ever imagine that it could not be the truth. And they've used Goebbels' propaganda techniques for a lot of this stuff. They're the propagators of the big lie. And they have hoodwinked the American people.
Everything they've done, Jim, has been big lie. Whether it was Iraq or what they're trying to crank up, gin up, fake up, fudge up about Iran, whether it was the notion that tax cuts are good for the economy, it's all big lie tactics.
Yeah, and it's done, and the American people are just so lazy and so gullible. That, you know, if you tell them that, hey, you know, do you know, if you go to people and say, do you know the word gullible is not in the dictionary? I'll guarantee you one thing, half of them will be up there looking for it.
Well, you're probably. Yeah, I do understand. It's the same thing that Stephen Colbert was getting at last Saturday night when he was talking about George Bush acting from his gut. And Colbert said, did you know there are four times as many nerves in the gut as there are in the brain?
Well, I can tell you which part of his alimentary canal he's using. I can tell you one thing. It's just been wind right out of his ass. And
yeah.
I'm just mad enough just to say exactly that, and that's exactly what it is. I mean, you know, honestly and truly, I've ridden horses when they break wind. It made more sense than George Bush when he gets on the public in front of a microphone.
Well, there's a heck of a lot of truth in that. Jim, thank you very much. We've got to hit our bottom of the hour break. Thanks thank you for bringing that to my attention.
Well, I didn't mean to be so earthy, but I'm in an earthy mood
fine.
Today. Good night.
Well, that's all right. You take care.
All right, out here.
Okay. And bang, there we are. A half hour of the program gone, wherever it is that the candle flame goes when it goes out. This is Head On for a Thursday night. Somebody find me this video, please. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443. 2366 on the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob.
Been to the playground lately?
If you have young children, you should take a look. Even though kids have been swinging and climbing and teetering for generations, playgrounds still manage to injure 500,000 kids each year. Check for hard landing surfaces, sharp edges, and broken equipment. Outdoor play is healthy for kids, but a playground that's unsafe and unsupervised can quickly become the pain ground. For more on playground safety, visit orthoinfo.org. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons.
If you've ever been to a Gloria Estefan concert, you know that there are few stars who can match her presence, performance, and talent. The time Gloria first experienced the thrill of being on a stage performing for people was also one of the first times she learned to stretch her wings.
My fondest memory of music in school was when I was playing the clarinet. I played the clarinet from 5th to 8th grade in the school band. My mother was pretty strict and never let me go anywhere, but of course, since it was part of the school program, she allowed me to go to Tallahassee, the capital of our state here, on a competition with the school band. Of course, to me, this was incredibly exciting. It was the first time I was allowed to go out of my home without a parent. We had chaperones, but we went there, participated in a three-day program, and it was some of the most beautiful memories I have as a child.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected, would you feel scared, proud, relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow. Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. Or go to peacecorps.gov.
Is good. I'm Bob Kincaid. You know the phone number, 877, the number 4, head on 877-443-2366. I encourage you to jump in, share your thoughts. Peter is with us. I haven't talked to Peter in a while. Hey, Peter, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
I'm doing great. Yourself?
I'm so happy things have leveled off. I just can't begin to tell you. Things are just seem to be clicking right along, and I couldn't be happier.
Don't jinx me.
Just don't hit that red button, for crying out loud. Not the red one.
Not the red button. I know, the ejector seat, and I'm through the ceiling. No, it's everything I can do. I'm sitting here, but it's everything I can do not to be up and dancing around the room and doing the whole Tom Cruise thing, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's working. We finally found a way to make it work, and I'm so proud of everybody who put in the effort to make this happen.
Well, you know, you guys were up literally all night. I just, of course, talked to Agnes for a second, and the woman is barely coherent. And I know Bruce was up till 3 or 4 a.m., and you must have been, too, running around buying electronic hardware at 2 a.m. Good Lord, it was heroic.
Well, bless his heart, 2 a.m. at Walmart is, you know, and let's go ahead and deal with this. In order to get the gizmo that let this work, yeah, we had to go to Walmart at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Well, you know, it was either that or order it, and we had to have it today. So I think, you know, it's an emergency situation. I think that it was kind of life and death. I think it's all right to do it.
I don't know. I'll have to, you know, I don't know, get a wet noodle and flog myself or something with it just because... you know, but on top of it, you know, it's bad enough it was Walmart, but we sent poor Bruce, who had never been to West Virginia, to West Virginia's busiest Walmart in the middle of the night. And
horrifying.
Oh, the report we got when he came back, he was like, dude, do you know that Walmart in Beckley is busy at 2 a.m.? Yes, Bruce, it's always busy.
Wow. Well, he sure is a trooper. I was glad he was up there to give a hand. And the show today was
A wonderful job today, I thought.
Yeah, I thought so too. And one of your last callers, I believe his name was Eugene. Was that his name?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, he was kind of did a little bit of a comedy thing. A lot of it was very funny. Although it could have been taken that way. I enjoyed it. But one of the things he was talking about is something that I've been kicking around in my head for the last couple of weeks, and it's got to do with immigration, the fact that deporting people who are not legal citizens, and you know it's really not anything new. But what we've been that we're threatening people, the brown-skinned people, with physical deportation. But Bob, we've been spiritually deporting people in this country for 200 years.
Break their back, break their spirit, and break their humanity. Yeah, why not?
Exactly. You don't have to physically remove someone to remove them from the country in any real meaningful way. It's been happening to women forever. If women were not sexually useful to the power structure, they'd be deported right away. And you know, according to the media, the only way to be a woman is to either be a prostitute or a victim. I mean, that typically is the way you're portrayed. One of the other.
Or Catherine Harris.
Yeah, or Catherine Harris, which is...
Wait a minute, we covered that.
Yes, we did. That was the prostitute part. And,
I'm sorry.
I am too, but, you know, it's tragically true. You know, been doing it to gay folks for years. You know, you're spiritually deporting them by not giving them equal participation and equal rights and the ability to function society like everybody else. But we do it to every sort of group. And, you know, the deportation thing is really nothing new, but I'm glad it's coming to a head in a physical way, and I'm glad these people are standing up and for themselves. But I just the whole undercurrent thing has really been bugging me the last couple of weeks about how people are spiritually deported. It's just been on my mind.
That's a great way of looking at it. Frankly, Peter, I had not looked at it in that fashion, and as usual, you bring a completely different perspective to it, and you're 100% correct. Is there anybody? There was a Back to Africa movement prior to the Civil War, and in fact, that's how the country of Liberia got founded.
Yeah.
But was there? You know, are we suggesting that for the the hunt? Well, God, to this day, that everyone who happens to be born here does not become a citizen.
Well, it doesn't.
No.
Yeah,
you're right.
Absolutely true. In every way, you are either part of and accepted, or you're at birth. Your soul is cast away. But yeah, you can stay, but you better keep your mouth shut and know your place. It's pretty much the way.
Yep.
It works. The other thing.
Yeah. Whether it's let's see. What are the places, Peter? Let's see. The women they need to be in the kitchen.
Well, this is true.
The gay folk need to be waiting the tables and doing the Broadway musicals.
This is true. our singing Ethel Merman songs.
Don't you do it.
I know. I feel a promo coming. I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole.
You know, but no, I mean, we laugh and we joke, but it's true. That's where stereotypes come from.
Well, it's true. And, you know, the whole show this afternoon was just wonderful. It's given me a lot to think about. The other thing I've been thinking about is the comments that were made about the Democratic Party really not taking any kind of a stand on things and just really kind of a sit back and watch the Republican Party self-destruct. And, you know, I have a dual mind about that. You know, the Republican Party is so damn vicious and such liars and such swift voters. I can understand the logic in just pulling back and letting him self-destruct. But by God, this stuff about not taking a stand on the filibuster of Alito and all the things they're letting slide are annoying the hell out of me. And I'm at a quandary. What are your thoughts about it?
Well, Peter, the American people want to believe in things. And granted, my least favorite word in the English language is believe. But, George Bush proved something. He proves that you can be a bumbling oaf, an utter fool, a damned idiot, and I mean damned in the spiritual sense of the word. And if you just play it right, the American people's basic desire to believe that their leaders are good will out. And as a consequence of that, you get a George Bush. So by not, look at 1994 and Newt Gingrich and the years before that and that stupid, foolish contract with America. That people want to believe, and perhaps it's more prevalent on the right than the left, but they want to believe that they're being told the truth by their leadership. So when Newt Gingrich comes out and says, well, we need a contract with America, America doesn't look up and go, we got one of those, it's the Constitution. They don't do that. They go, yep, you said it, we believe it.
Well,
we need a contract with America.
It's true. And,
so the Democrats have got to understand that, Peter, or we're in real trouble. We have got to make our beliefs very well known. I had and I've got it somewhere in the stack here. I get these press releases from the Democratic National Committee. And sometimes I get some really good information. Other times I get things that just curl my hair. One of them I got today, and it said, we're winning.
Yeah, I get
it. And I thought, well, cool.
Yeah.
That means, there's a poll out there that says people like Democratic issues better than... No, it was a memo to say that Democratic candidates for Congress had raised more money than Republicans.
Well, I think...
And to someone at the DNC, that constitutes winning.
Well, yeah, that's a pretty simplistic way to look at it. There's so many things happening now. The takeover of the internet, and the internet has been a communications issue, so people can communicate. But now, by turning it over to the phone companies, they've ruled it to be a media for distributing media. In other words, a one-way forum like a television set or a radio, which is exactly what it's not. Yet that's what they're trying to call it. So that by handing it over to the power structure of the telephone companies and the cable companies, you're going to end up with the same situation like you do the television stations, where the voices they don't like are suppressed, or and their bandwidth is reduced, et cetera, et cetera. They're doing, they didn't see the internet coming. I guess no one really did. It came as a huge surprise.
Except Al Gore.
Yeah, until he invented it. It's a shame they took over their regular media years ago. So now they're making a concerted effort to do it with the internet. So, something has to change pretty quick, because we start losing the internet, we have nothing left to do but take to the streets like we did in the '60s. But maybe that's a good thing.
Well, I can understand how they would want to crack down on it. I mentioned in a negative sense the fundraising issues, Peter. But in 2004, Howard Dean raised prodigious amounts of money, $2 and $3 at a time on the internet.
Yes, he did.
And it had never been done before.
Freaked them.
And that wasn't Exxon's money.
No.
That was money coming from people that Exxon fears.
Yes, it was us.
This is, you know, the First Amendment for most members of Congress and most members of the executive branch and God knows the judicial, the First Amendment is something that you talk about on the 4th of July and then everybody needs to shut up and go along and get along. The internet is the absolute number one manifestation in American society today, and I would suggest world society, of not shutting up and not going along and not getting along.
Well, you know,
and that makes it brilliant.
The Christians do the same thing. You just mentioned the Constitution only being discussed on the 4th of July, and they keep Jesus relegated to Easter Sunday. And then the rest of the year,
right.
God struck them down. And, you know.
Careful there. That was almost Katharine Hepburn, Peter.
It was a little. She gets dottery now. That, you know, I have a multiple. And I hate to tell you who all's in there. It would scare the living daylights. Scares me sometimes.
Well, no, I got a wonderful email. From a listener by the name of Sherry, or perhaps Cherie. No, I think this is Sherry, S-H-E-R-R-E-E.
Yes.
And she writes, religious fundamentalists believe God gave us a brain but doesn't want us to use it.
Oh, yeah.
Political fundamentalists believe the founders endorsed free speech but didn't want us to practice it.
Yes.
Free market fundamentalists believe there should be no interference with markets except by CEOs of giant corporations.
Yes. Well put. I like the way she put that. And she said,
testify, Sister Cherie, testify.
Yeah, she's hit the nail right on the head with that. She is. I completely agree.
Well, Peter, so good to talk with you this evening. Thanks for all of your help, always.
We
couldn't do half of this without you, you know.
Okay, well, you guys are a lot of fun. Yeah, I just never know what's going to come up next. It's always, oh, my God, what?
Yeah, it's just this terrified phone call from Bob going, Peter, I think I broke it.
And I'm going, oh, my God, it said what? No, it couldn't. Anyway, I'm so glad things are smoother, and you go to bed early tonight.
I'm going to try to.
Okay, buddy. I'll talk to you later.
Take care, Peter.
Bye.
And let's keep it rolling on along. David calling from Tennessee. Haven't heard from you in a while. David?
There you are.
There he is.
Well, after those words from Sister Cherie, you know, you and I could break the night off.
Yep, pretty much.
Pretty much, but... I want to coattail on a thought by the fine caller, my good friend Jim, that I hope to meet someday. This is all a product of the Bushistas and all of the handlers realizing that America was beginning to say, look, boys, you got to start talking to us. You know, in the last 2 to 4 weeks, we've seen Bush suddenly take questions. Now that Rumsfeld gets to, you know, speak to a guy that's actually speaking in sentences and rational thought, and he can't handle it. But I want all of America, I want all of Bob Nation, I want everybody to realize they won't let this go on much longer because America is kicking their lying, thieving, stealing, reprehensible butt.
Well, I can only hope that that kicking will take place and that this is the beginning of something.
They're not going to let it go on much longer, Bob, because they've got the October surprise scheduled for some time, some way. And they've got, based on these things happening, you know, here Donald is getting his butt kicked. Bush gets squawked at. No, let him speak. Let him speak. You know, it's not about nuclear. Let him speak. It's okay. Well, they're not gonna do that week after week after week while the hard questions are offered by a plain-spoken man in a suit or work clothes in an environment where Bush is in the room. You know, they don't care if Cindy Sheehan does that forced to stand in a ditch with cow pasture runoff at her ankles. They don't care if she does it there because they can sick the county sheriff of Phelps, North Texas, to run along and shoo her away and potentially put her in handcuffs. Well, if they let these true outspoken Americans ask the questions that should have been asked 4 years ago, they can't let that continue because a litany of that will wake up the dead, and most Americans are quite dead. Mentally and emotionally and politically. How else could Newt Gingrich, that you spoke about earlier, why didn't somebody say, just as you did, Hey, Newt, we got a constitution. You and your contract can take the rest of the day off. See you. Bye. Have a nice day. No. Nobody said that. They were so undereducated, underinformed, disinterested. Oh, wow. Something new's going on. Newt got a contract. Wow. We're somebody now. We got a vote.
Look, a squirrel.
Exactly. Well, we are at zenith right now, and I hope the Democratic Party is getting this on tape when Americans speak out, because the bombing of Iran, something is going to happen such that the Bushistas can say, well, you know, we can't have any of these people like that fellow that accosted Secretary Rumsfeld. We can't have him that close because he's a security hazard. Don't you know? So that'll all be cut out, and then.
Well, you know, you make me wonder. You know, you mentioned October surprise, David, but you make me wonder. You remember how they said you don't roll out a new product in August?
That's why they did
the war resolution in October. Well, you make me wonder if their hand is being forced at this point to where they're going to have to roll the new product out before October, and the ugliness begins sooner. Because this is intolerable for them. This cannot go on. I mean, this isn't just the curtain being pulled away from the wizard. This is the curtain being torn down and Toto tearing at his pants leg.
Well, the pants are coming down is what's going on. And no, they can't take it because it's truth. It's regular Americans speaking said truth. No, they can't. They've got to do something to stop that. And in terms of August versus October, versus something else. How many times in their desperate times when some young marketing exec said, hey, boys, try this. How many times did GM bring out a 94.5 or a 95.5? Never mind, yep. August. How about a May surprise?
Well, you know? That's exactly what I am beginning to fear here. You mentioned GM. It's a great time to bring up my Northwest Alabama Bush sticker update. I saw sticker number 8 and sticker number 9 today.
Oh, good.
Sticker number 9 was being driven by a corpulent woman of early to mid-30s, Cadillac Escalade, Bush sticker, alone in the vehicle, and a Jesus fish on the back.
You know, I almost said that makes a fellow want to key a car, but no, that makes you want to stick a, you know, W the Coke whore, little black square on that back windshield. Do something. Gee whiz.
Well, I don't know. I think it could get a little bit fun tomorrow. Weather permitting, I'm going to be on a sidewalk on the main drag of Florence, Alabama.
All right.
With a table and my little remote set up and my little head on with Bob Kincaid banner. And there is and a little set of speakers that are going to be playing what we're doing for the passersby. And there is going to be talk radio heard for the first time in Florence, Alabama, unlike anything they've ever heard before.
Bob, do you have any provision for security?
Well, right now it consists of feats don't fail me now.
Gotcha, bro. Well, I tell you what, do your stretching exercises before you set that.
Yeah, you mean my hurdle stretches where I do the whole Bugs Bunny, got my running shoes on.
I'm not kidding you. Somebody's going to come along and, you know, really protest that you're down.
Yeah, I'm not going in the whole tie-dyed t-shirt and cut off blue jean shorts and the flip-flops. No. I'm going to blend.
I wish you had a light tan, lightweight summer suit, 3-button with a black knit tie to sit out there just to confuse them even more. Well,
it should be fun, and you know, I think we're gonna. I'm glad you sort of led me into this. You're really good at that, David. I think we're gonna kick up an hour early tomorrow.
Oh, cool!
So it'll be 6 o'clock Eastern tomorrow evening, because the whole shindig begins at 5 o'clock Central, and I want to be there for all of it. And it knocks off at 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, And
so,
are you
part of something, I take it?
Well, it's a thing they call First Fridays in Florence. It's sort of a street party that happens on the first Friday of every month here in Florence, Alabama.
Oh, okay. There when you first told me about it, I was thinking, oh my gracious, is he just going to be like on a table at a street corner and it's him against the world? I thought maybe you were like that fellow that used to ride a bicycle around Knoxville, Tennessee that had this sign covered in saran wrap that said Acts 2:38 or hell. But no, you're going to have some sort of a chance to blend in. Okay, good.
Yeah, I'm not quite there yet, David. And then Deuteronomy of Gath saith unto his son who begatteth. No, I'm not quite there yet.
No, not quite like that. So when those three guys in the cutoff number 8 T-shirts start heading your way, there will be witnesses, I think.
I'm sincerely hoping so. Yes.
All right, now for all your listeners, I'm going to inflict a very inside, funny, potentially funny to Bob and I. Item, and this is a cooking question that I'm going to throw at Bob, and he'll be able to deflect it, go to a break, and get me out of his hair real quick. This is an almost serious question for Bob. The rest of the world will be bored. Bob, if I could get you Mayakoba's for $4 a kilo, what would you think of that?
I'd lose my tiny little mind. $4 a kilo?
Well, watch your mailbox, Hoss.
Hot diggity.
Now, I'll leave it up diggity. To you to get yourself out of that hole. I just dug it for you. Bob,
and I appreciate it. It's going to be one of those culinary moments. Thank you so much, David. You have yourself a wonderful night.
You know, it's a bit of a curveball. Gee, Willikers, I just thought I'd throw you one just to, you know.
Well, and we do have to roll because it's the top of the hour. But, I can't believe I didn't hear a word out of you about Vince Young or the running back from USC.
Well, I'm sorry. Mr. Lindale White, I believe, will redeem himself. I think he is under that off-season vacation he gave himself, a baller, as they like to say now. And I am somewhat convinced, based on reviewing of USC's performance, that he could be the steal of the draft for the Tennessee Titans. And just so
as far down as he went, he very well may be, and he might even be able to offset the occasional touchdown pass that Pac-Man Jones gives up, if he comes to work.
Speaking of Pac-Man, in 15 seconds, based on the fact that he got almost interviewed by TV about a week ago, one of his housekeeper bodyguard posse members said, Pac-Man is staying at home these days. He needs some chill time. So he has elected not to participate in the off-season conditioning drills as offered as a purely voluntary measure by the Tennessee Titans. Four of his teammates are in print saying, where the hell is he?
Well, I saw Coach Fisher the other day on television, David, and he was very genteel because Coach Jeff Fisher is not one to stand and foam at the mouth or anything, but he reminded me of that old maiden aunt that many of us had, who used to look at you when you had done wrong and say, "Son, I'm not mad at you. I'm disappointed." And that alone, you'd rather have taken the whooping.
Oh well, your ex of the Mountaineers football squad fellow is. He is headed toward one because now his teammates, when they're in the weight room now and have been for the past 10 days, Pac-Man has been quite absent. And he has chosen not to participate in off-season drills. You know when the bonding occurs? When they build up that support? You know, when they're
watching. Yeah, the bonding goes down when you're doing the stuff you don't have to do and you build brotherhood and you build camaraderie.
When you've just been handed $13 million to play a game and you can't show up for off-season conditioning?
$13 million, I got time. You got a football, I can play.
You got $225 on the bench? I'll make that thing go up and down. It may take me a while, but I'm going to do it.
Hey, David, thanks so much, and have a wonderful evening.
You too, Bob.
Bye now. All right, we've got a couple of lines open, I do believe. Jump in, jump in Thursday evening. We've had a lot of fun so far. Let's keep the fun rolling. This is Head On. It's the Head On Radio Network, no less. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
Listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Having lost in its attempt to destroy union contracts using bankruptcy laws, Comair will be back in negotiations with the Teamsters on May 11th. 1,000 flight attendants at Comair are fighting to defend their families' livelihoods against harsh demands for concessions. The union is trying to work with the airline and has offered a proposal it says will help the airline financially without devastating workers.
After months of strong words on both sides of the bargaining table, pilots at bankrupt Northwest Airlines have agreed to concessions of nearly $385 million. The contract, approved by 63% of the voting members, retains a 23.9% pay cut, but protects the pilots from the outsourcing of jobs. Northwest had requested that a bankruptcy court throw out the contracts of any unions not meeting concession demands. The pilots had threatened to strike if that happened. The flight attendants are scheduled to vote on their contract June 6, and baggage handlers, represented by the International Association of Machinists, are still working out a labor deal.
The United Auto Workers Union has called for a strike vote at Delphi. UAW Delphi locals will complete the vote by May 14th. On May 9th, the bankruptcy judge is scheduled to rule on a motion by Delphi that would give the giant auto parts company the power to throw out its own union contracts rather than having the court make that decision. The UAW and other Delphi unions have said all along that if their contracts are destroyed in the bankruptcy process, a strike is likely, and that could be catastrophic for Delphi and for General Motors. The UAW says what Delphi wants here is illegal. Delphi is pressing its 33,000 union U.S. workers for steep wage and benefits cuts. Delphi is pressing its 33,000 U.S. workers for steep wage and benefits cuts as the workers and their unions try to defend. Benefits cuts as the workers and their unions try to defend prevailing wages and benefits.
Air Jamaica could be heading for a strike as the airline's more than 300 flight attendants have rejected the most recent contract offer from the airline. Last week, the flight attendants voted that the Bustamante Industrial Trade Union, which represents them, could strike if an agreement with the airline over wages could not be reached. The two sides have been in contract negotiations since last year.
We're here discussing child development with some experts. Tell me the normal development of, say, a two-year-old.
My truck.
So a child that age should know 2 to 4 word phrases. Good. And what about cognitive development? Ah, engaging in pretend play. I see. And what of social
development? Look, Anna!
Being enthusiastic about the company of other children. All right, thank you.
It's time to change how we view a child's growth. It's not just physical. There are milestones your child should reach in how he plays, learns, speaks, and acts. A delay in any of these areas could be a sign of a developmental problem, even autism. The good news is, the earlier it's recognized, the more you can do to help your child reach his full potential. Talk with a doctor. Visit cdc.gov/act early or call 1-800-CDC-INFO. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Learn the signs. Act early.
Here is today's economic report. If a full-time stay-at-home mother was paid for all of her work, how much should she be paid? A study released by Salary.com on Wednesday suggests $134,121. The survey compiled a list of 10 jobs that most closely fit the role of a mother, including housekeeper, cook, janitor, and psychologist. The average salaries of those jobs were then calculated into the average 91.6 hours per week stay-at-home mothers said they spent working. The most recent U.S. Census reported 5.6 million women playing the role of stay-at-home mom with children under the age of 15.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of six U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss a tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
I'm Bob Kincaid. This is head-on, 877, the number 4, head-on, 877-443-2366 is the number to call if you want to get involved in the program. You've got to, you know, be under your bonnet, burr under your saddle. Don't let it stay there. It's not good for you. Straight to the phones, our other David, David in Maine, has been waiting. Hey, David, you're head on. Good to finally talk to you. David, are you there?
I think David left us, dear.
Oh. Dadgummit. Well, I'm sorry about that. You know, it's one of the perils of conversation radio. Some folks, there's some waiting involved, and I'm sorry. I was looking forward to talk to David because it seems like every time I've tried to talk to him lately, something went wrong. Knock wood, though. Now, okay, that being the case, I want to share with you a couple of little somethings that are sort of banging around out there. I hope to have the audio of Ray McGovern and Donald Rumsfeld soon. Our good friend Benedict at Large in the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room provided the audio. I have sent it along to Agnes, and she's probably working with it even as we speak. Now, by the way, if you have never been to the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room, go by. For God's sakes, it's free. And have yourself a darn fine time. A lot of good people in there. A lot of good interaction while the show is going on. It's sort of real-time squared, if you will. And there are message boards for you. We have message boards for you at HeadOnRadio.com. Also free. As is your opinion. You know, just lightly moderated in terms of don't get too ugly, don't get too personal. And, you know, make it a place where you wouldn't be ashamed for your kid to be reading over your shoulder. Because our kids read it over our shoulder. Okay? Okay. The Tony Snow memo. Have you seen this? ABC News is where I found it. found the reference. ABC News writes, maybe leaks are going to be more common in the Tony Snow era. The man's not even started officially yet as White House press secretary, and already the tightness of the Andy Card days seems to be a thing of the past. Because, in essence, Tony Snow has written a memo to Josh Bolton, Dan Bartlett, and Nicole Wallace. ABC News exclusively obtained the undated memo, and they got it from a Republican. Oh, it's nice to see the Republicans putting the shiv in the back of their own after, you know, watching Democrats do it to Bill Clinton for so long. Some Republican gave it to ABC News, and that particular Republican doesn't care much for the hiring of a shameless flack from Fox News. After observing how the press office has operated, first from the outside and for the last week from the inside, I wanted to share some initial thoughts about what I think needs to be done. Thank you so much for the trust you've placed in me and the risk you took by making an unconventional choice in a most conventional White House. I promise I won't screw it up. Time out. You know, blow the whistle. Everybody run over to the sideline. An unconventional choice? This guy was a sleazebag from Fox News. He's carried water for George Bush since, 1998? An unconventional choice in a most conventional White House. No, it's a conventional choice in an unconventional White House, and what makes this White House unconventional is the abject mendacity with which they operate. He says, when I was at the podium with the president and Scott McClellan, I meant to recognize Scotty and say something nice about him and the big shoes I have to fill, like Hillary Swank after she run for Boys Don't Cry and failed to mention Chad Lowe. I had intended to say something, and I just blanked. Am I missing something, or is Tony Snow and Scott are Tony Snow and Scotty McClellan having a little log cabin moment in the, like Hillary Swank after she won for Boys Don't Cry? Now, I may be forgetting something, but somebody can clue me in. Isn't that sort of a precursor to, there's some Brokeback Mountain kind of stuff going on, only it's girly and Boys Don't Cry. Am I wrong? But how interesting that he, you know, I thought we were being derisive of Mr. McClellan here in the progressive wing and Democrats and, you know, decent people when we referred to the White House press secretary McClellan as Scotty. But no, Tony Snow calls him Scotty as well. And then there's after talking to reporters and other staffers, I realized better why people like him so much, talking about Scotty, and all those cats and dogs at home. The man's a saint. I mean, he has to reference the cats and dogs, can't reference the wife and kids. I'm just saying. Second, I've been doing my own reporting, and I know this really is a memo from Tony Snow. I mean, this is what you're going to get. I know there are concerns inside that I might mistake the George Bush show for the Tony Snow show. No, Tony, we're all kind of mistaking the whole damn shooting match for the Mr. Bill show, if you want to get right down to it. But this is the kicker. Those of us who all along have suggested, unfairly to the sex worker trade, I might add, that all that was going on hot military stud for you .com, that was his website. Tony Snow says Even though there may be concerns that I might mistake the George Bush show for the Tony Snow show, I'm very extremely conscious of this. I'm going to be very careful. I assure you that I'm going to keep the spotlight where it belongs, on the president. Wait for it. Wait for it. This is one of those hanging curveballs way out over the plate that you just know you're going to get the big, fat part of the bat just all over. I'm going to keep the spotlight where it belongs, on the president. I'm the gigolo, paid to meet specific needs and then leave. Unfortunately, Halperin thinks I'm an ugly gigolo. An ugly gigolo. Are you there with me? An ugly... Tony Snow just said, I'm a gigolo. I am a gigolo. Tell you what. That's and that's just the beginning of fun with Tony Snow and his little memo. When we come back, the phone calls. We're going to take a break. And when we, like I said, when we come back, your phone calls to 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Yes, we can bomb most any land. On CNN with marching bands. Pour ourselves an ice cold Coke. Make a war. Tell a joke.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2-new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Listen to me, Shirley Jones. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the Internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Hello?
Louise, it's Ralph. Listen, would you go out with me tomorrow?
At 8? Ralph, I'd love to.
Well, I have an appointment with my orthopedic surgeon, and I really want you to come along.
A doctor's office? That's so special. Oh, I just remembered I have to delete some emails.
Come on, Louise. We're going to talk about the pain in my hip, and I could use a little support.
I guess I'm not very hip.
You could take notes and help me remember stuff. Look, I have all my doctor questions written down, but there's so much to remember. I need you there with me so I don't miss anything.
Couldn't we just play miniature golf?
Louise, I'm not asking for a kidney.
Bringing someone to your appointment is a good way to make sure you and your physician are on the same page. The idea is to partner with your doctor and share information so you can make informed decisions together. For more on patient-doctor communications, visit orthoinfo.org, a message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, where patient-centered care means getting better together.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy.
He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Head on. I'm Bob Kincaid, and I'm waiting to find out from Agnes if, in fact, we have a caller on the line. It was my understanding we had been rejoined by our friend David from Maine. Let's go to the phones. Hey, David, you're head on.
Good evening, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing quite well, I think.
That's
How about
good.
Yourself?
I'm doing all right. I sent you a video in your box today regarding a Russian superjet called the Sukhoi S-40. Man, Bob,
yes.
Have you seen it?
I haven't had a chance to, no, to
no,
be quite
no,
honest.
No, but I mean,
we
have you heard about it?
Earlier.
Have you heard about it?
No. No, is this what you were discussing with John last night? I heard a little bit of that.
No, I was mentioning a movie called Russian Ark, but I thought it was really an incredible type of historic type movie of Russian history. It was shot in one single shot mm-hmm. in the Hermitage Museum.
Yes, in St. Petersburg.
Using hyper cameras. And there were like over 837 actors. And
oh,
actually,
my goodness.
There were 837 actors, and there were like thousands and thousands of extras in the building. But it's a really incredible movie. It's groundbreaking. It's revolutionary. But the S-40 is just as groundbreaking and revolutionary. It's a superjet. It can actually do. I'm not kidding you, Bob. When you see the footage, it does barrel rolls, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it
yeah.
can go flat dead, like it's crashing, but actually it's flying. I'm telling you, when you see it, you go, oh my God, how ahead are they of us? That's the first thing you'll say. Another thing it does is it can flip in the air. It can go head over feet, just like whoop, like it's like you're flipping like a coin or something.
Oh, that's wild!
It's amazing, and I would say forward it to everybody just to take a look at this marvel of achievement they did. My hats are off to these Russian aerospace designers and engineers. They really, I mean, that's revolutionary right there. Even my dad who's who's experienced being a pilot and in the military and whatnot, he was just like, this is so revolutionary and groundbreaking, I can't even begin to tell you. It's just amazing. I can't believe I haven't heard of it before yet. And my dad just showed it to me. Someone put it up on Video Google or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They've been doing a lot of air shows with it and stuff like that. But the footage I sent you in particular, it's 3 minutes, and the ones that I was seeing before were not. They didn't show what it could do, what this baby could really do, as they say. But this footage that I give you is like 3 minutes of just like sheer action in the sky. Like every single just flip in the like is going straight down, dead, doing free falls. Just stops right midair. Oh, and it can also fly like horizontally.
Mm.
Crazy!
That's amazing.
I'm telling you.
Well, as soon as the show's over, I'll give it a watch when I've got the bandwidth to spare.
Yeah, when you see, your eyes will go, huh? And I just wanted to mention that in as a coincidence, another marvel of Russian achievement. And I would advise everyone to see the Russian Ark movie for not the same type of achievement, but for film-wise, I'm telling you, Bob, when you see this film, there's none other like it. Nobody in any country has done it, and it will never be done again, because he was only granted a week to do it in the Hermitage. He got it the last shot, the last roll of film. I mean, it's so freaking poetic.
Did you send that one along as well?
No, you have to rent that, or you can rent that at your store, or you can I'll send you a link at hap.com. You can buy it or not or whatnot. It's about
okay.
It'll cost you like $10 or so.
Okay.
Yeah, and let me see what else I want to talk about. Oh, did you see the footage on the hardball of the Iraqi soldiers protesting not going to war?
No.
Oh, that's legendary. What happened is on hardball, the trainers were telling them, okay, you guys are going to serve, but it's not near your home. It's not near Fallujah. All of a sudden, all the soldiers in the whole entire battalion, they just threw off their clothes and said, no, we won't go.
They may have better sense than we do. Of course, it's their home.
Of course it is. And then the other equal amount of protest, I don't know if I got here late on the program, so I don't know. Did you talk about the Ray McGovern thing with Rumsfeld?
We've talked about it a little bit, and in fact, Agnes tells me that thanks to Benedict at Large in the chat room, we've got the audio of it.
Well, I would certainly let people hear that, because that's my hats are off to that guy. And the fact that he actually challenged Rumsfeld in that way, even with a room of cheerleaders and whatnot, which I really can't believe that people are still... They didn't even know who Ray McGovern was, and that's why Rumsfeld let him stay, because he saw him, and he's like, I'm not going to let this guy – he goes, I'm not going to let this guy get taken away. It's going to look like bad press. I have to confront him right now. I don't know if you saw
And Rumsfeld kind of lost.
Yeah, he kind of lost. I don't think there's no winning in this anymore. I think it's
– Well, no, this is – at this point,
hello?
Real hubris, David.
Yeah.
Rumsfeld will not quit. Bush will not fire him. There is nothing to be done but to drive him from the office. To make it absolutely untenable for him to remain there. And we are fast approaching that point. Now, of course, our good friend David in Tennessee brought up the idea that the hotter it gets for people like Rumsfeld, the more likely it is that we get, a surprise attack on someone like Iran. Because that's the way that a cornered, I don't want to be rough on the weasels or the rats, but, a cornered rat is a dangerous rat.
I have to agree with you on that one. But I really think that if Rumsfeld stays, he's just going to keep damaging the administration even more, and I just think it's corrosive. And in a weird way, I think that's kind of good for us. I don't know.
Well, no, I tend to agree, because these people are not motivated by fact. They're not motivated by knowledge. They're not motivated by policy or rational analysis. This is faith-based government at its very worst. These people believe that they're right, and no amount of fact is going to prove otherwise to them. I well remember Ronald Reagan when he stood up and made one of the great Freudian faux pas or slips or whatever of his presidency, when he stood up and told a group of people that, well, facts are stupid things. You know, it was supposed to be facts are stubborn things. That's
yeah.
The old saying. But no, for Ronald Reagan, the real truth is that facts are stupid things, and that's the way it is with Republicans. Facts are stupid things. Facts are things that are not to be dealt with, because facts don't matter. Beliefs do. Tinkerbellism is what controls these people.
You know what's crazy, Bob? They actually thought that Massoud was going to get the death penalty. They actually thought that. They thought that a jury was going to convict someone of just having a bad thought to go to death. I mean, either way, Massoud looks good in a weird paradox type of way. I don't know. It's strange, because he can spin it any way he wants to.
Well, he's going to spend the rest of his life playing canasta with Richard Reed the shoe bomber, isn't he?
Right. Right.
You know, and I mean, these are two guys that you know, when you've got a guy who's a bubble off plum and he wants to be part of your organization, you make him feel like he's really important, and then you send him off to, you know, take out the trash or something. Are you there, David? Well, I fear that we have lost David. It is at the bottom of the hour.
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up. And
that being the case, Agnes, would you please start the music, and let's take the bottom of the hour break. Your Cup of Joe report is on the way. Brought to you by our good friend Joe Vecchio, whom you can hear every Saturday night right here on the Head On Radio Network at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Jump on into the conversation. We're doing fine. 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. This is the Head On Radio Network. The subliminal mind fuck America.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
And I'm Jesse Russell. Nearly 100 striking workers at the University of Miami have called off a two-month-long strike. The workers have come to an agreement with their employer, Unico Service Company. The university had agreed to the janitors' original demands to raise the minimum wage of contract employees nearly a month ago, but the strike continued on allegations of unfair labor practices and a desire to have union representation. Unico has agreed to allow the janitors to choose whether or not they want to form a union. The workers returned to work this morning.
By intervening on behalf of workers with pension investments in a corporate takeover at Lafarge NA, the laborers' union was able to boost the purchase price offered, helping to protect the value of the pension investments in that company. Laborers' union director of corporate affairs, Richard Metcalf.
$500 million higher than the original offer, so the people that own these shares will get an increased payout of $500 million, and so any worker that has investment through their pension funds will see the increase on that.
Metcalf says workers...
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
G
She had to go like 3 miles out of her way because Bush was there visiting. And he had his whole entourage and Secret Service, and they were blocking off the highway that she has to take to get to work.
The Bush got you down? Let Grace and Rama Homebodies get you up every Sunday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern right here on the Head On Radio Network and homebodies.ramabahama.net. We'll trim the mess for you.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
You know, we're following up from the wonderful time we had just this afternoon with our head-on showcase between me, our good friend Bruce Birch, and our equally good friend Dr. Bill O'Brien, both of whom were at the Beckley Raleigh County Armory for the Business Expo brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights. It was a lot of fun. I could tell there was quite a buzz in the air there in Beckley, and we covered a lot of topics, and yet there's a ton more to be hit by the time evening rolls around. Not the least of which is what I hope we're going to hear next. As you've been told, or as we heard first from Jim at the top of the show. There was a significant confrontation between Ray McGovern and Donald Rumsfeld today. Agnes, do you have the clip that Benedict at Large prepared for us? If you do, would you please be so kind as to run it?
There for international studies, and of course within the speech came a few protesters.
And so I would like to ask you to be upfront with the American people. Why did you lie to get us into a war that was not necessary and that has caused these kinds of casualties? Why?
Well, first of all, I haven't lied. I did not lie then. Colin Powell didn't lie. He spent weeks and weeks with the Central Intelligence Agency people and prepared a presentation that I know he believed was accurate. And he presented that to the United Nations. The president spent weeks and weeks with the Central Intelligence people. And he went to the American people and made a presentation. I'm not in the intelligence business. They gave the world their honest opinion. It appears that there were not weapons of mass destruction there.
You said you knew where they were.
I did not. I said I knew where suspect sites were.
You said you knew where they were, near Tikrit, near Baghdad, and northeast, south, and west of there. Those are your words.
My words were that... No. Wait a minute. Let them stay 1 second. Just a second. You're getting plenty of play, sir.
I just like an honest answer.
I'm giving it to you.
We're talking about lies and your allegation that there was bulletproof evidence of ties between Al-Qaeda and Iraq. Was that a lie, or were you misled?
Zarqawi was in Baghdad during the pre-war period. That is a fact.
Zarqawi. He was in the north of Iraq in a place where Saddam Hussein had no rule.
He was also in Baghdad.
Yeah, when he needed to go to the hospital. Come on, these people aren't idiots. They know the story.
You are... Let me give you an example. It's easy for you to make a charge, but why do you think that the men and women in uniform, every day when they came out of Kuwait and went into Iraq, put on chemical weapon protective suits? Because they liked the style? They honestly believed that there were chemical weapons. Saddam Hussein had used chemical weapons on his own people previously. He'd used them on his neighbor, the Iranians, and they believed he had those weapons. We believed he had those weapons.
That's what we call a non sequitur. It doesn't matter what the troops believe. It matters what you believe.
I think, Mr. Secretary, the debate is over. We have other questions, courtesy to the audience.
I guess over here.
Good grief.
That's a hard act to follow.
You've forgotten your question.
Oh, my God.
Here for international studies, and of course, within the speech came a few protesters.
If it wasn't, it should be now abundantly clear why I say that the word believe is the single most dangerous word in the English language. When Donald Rumsfeld said that there were weapons of mass destruction stockpiled in Tikrit and Baghdad and points north, west, south, and east of there, he didn't say they were suspected sites. He said they were there. And when Saddam Hussein used chemical weapons on the Iranians, he did so because we sold them to him. And Donald Rumsfeld was the intermediary sent by the Reagan administration to complete that sale. My father's in the next room. I don't want to scream and carry on and lose my mind. But this is the sort of thing that makes me want to. I'm inclined, Agnes, if you could be so kind, please. I want the whole exchange again. I want to let it soak in. Colin Powell spent weeks with the Central Intelligence Agency, and I know that he believed what he was saying was true. Screw what Colin Powell believed. Screw what George Bush thought he believed. Screw Donald Rumsfeld.
Here for international studies, and of course within the speech came a few protesters.
We don't want to hear it.
And so I would like to ask you to be upfront with the American people. Why did you lie to get us into a war that was not necessary and that has caused these kinds of casualties? Why?
Well, first of all, I haven't lied. I did not lie then. Colin Powell didn't lie. He spent weeks and weeks with the Central Intelligence Agency people and prepared a presentation that I know he believed was accurate. And he presented that to the United Nations. The president spent weeks and weeks with the Central Intelligence people, and he went to the American people and made a presentation. I'm not in the intelligence business. They gave the world their honest opinion. It appears that there were not weapons of mass destruction there.
You said you knew where they were.
I did not. I said I knew where suspect sites were, and we were just...
You said you knew where they were, near Tikrit, near Baghdad, and north, east, south, and west of there. Those are your words.
My words were that... No. Wait a minute. Let him stay 1 second. Just a second.
This is America, huh?
You're getting plenty of play, sir.
I just like an honest answer.
I'm giving it to you.
We're talking about lies, and your allegation that there was bulletproof evidence of ties between Al-Qaeda and Iraq. Was that a lie, or were you misled?
Zarqawi was in Baghdad during the pre-war period. That is a fact.
Zarqawi? He was in the north of Iraq in a place where Saddam Hussein had no rule. That's where he was.
He was also in Baghdad.
Yeah, when he needed to go to the hospital. Come on, these people aren't idiots. They know the story.
That was when he was getting his leg taken off.
You are... Let me give you an example. It's easy for you to make a charge, but why do you think that the men and women in uniform, every day when they came out of Kuwait and went into Iraq, put on chemical weapon protective suits? Because they liked the style? They honestly believed that there were chemical weapons. Saddam Hussein had used chemical weapons on his own people previously. He'd used them on his neighbor, the Iranians, and they believed he had those weapons. We believed he had those weapons.
That's what we call a non sequitur. It doesn't matter what the troops believe. It matters what you believe.
I think, Mr. Secretary, the debate is over. We have other questions. Okay. Courtesy to your audience.
Courtesy to your audience.
I guess over here.
Good grief. That's a hard act to follow.
You've forgotten your question.
Now, let's be clear about who that voice was challenging Rumhead, or Rumfeld, Rumfield, Rummy. That was Ray McGovern. Ray McGovern isn't that guy from North Carolina who looked like the Norman Rockwell painting who is a real estate salesman or something. Ray McGovern is a retired CIA career officer. Ray McGovern had Rumsfeld's own words to jam back at him. Ray McGovern wasn't playing. Colin Powell. Well, didn't and his speech to the UN. Didn't we have a story a week or so ago about the fact that the Bush administration knew when they said it that the mobile weapons labs were actually weather balloon factories? Didn't we have that story? That was the evidence that Colin Powell sincerely believed. He believed evidence they had already been told was false. But he believed it. Now, add to this, and I'm coming to the phones in a moment. Add to this something today from AFP. A former Middle East specialist of the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency has condemned what he called an organized campaign of manipulation by the Bush administration to justify the Iraq war. No, we're not talking about Ray McGovern. Paul Pillar, a former CIA analyst specializing in counterterrorism in the Middle East and Asia, said in an interview with the Spanish newspaper El País that the United States had particularly wanted to prove a link between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein. That was not the case, he was quoted as saying. I suppose by some definitions, that could be called a lie. A lie. So, Ray McGovern, a former CIA officer, says that Donald Rumsfeld, Colin Powell, Condi Rice, Richard Pearl, Paul Wolfowitz, George Bush, and Dick Cheney lied us into a war. So also saith Paul Pillar, who specialized for the CIA in counterterrorism for the Middle East and Asia. I'm shaking right now. And I'm not sure what it is that's making me most angry. Am I most angry at Rumsfeld, Pearl, Wolfowitz, Armitage, Negroponte, Bush, Cheney, Condi, Colon? Am I most angry at them? On their hands is pooled the congealing blood of 2,400 Americans who need not have died. Not to mention the blood of over 100,000 Iraqi non-combatant civilians, half, fully half and more of whom are women, were by God, they're past tense people now, were women and children. Am I most angered at them? Or am I most angered at that weird, cancerous little knot of camp followers and courtesans who were sitting there clapping at the idea that a man who would dare ask an honest question of the person whose salary he helps to pay, that they were clapping for the man to be dragged away and muzzled in a country that dares call itself free? Where is your anger directed? Do you get angry at a rattlesnake for doing what rattlesnakes do? Or are you more justifiably and justly and righteously angered at people who will walk away from an event such as that and say, you know, they just don't understand the world changed after 9/11. And we have to fight the terrorists over there so we won't fight them here. Whither lies the spear point of your anger? Let's go to the phones. Bob has been waiting. Bob from North Dakota. Hey, Bob. Sorry you had to wait. Welcome. You're head on.
Hello, Bob.
How are you?
Do you hear me?
I hear you fine.
Oh, I hear you 5x5, like our friend says. So let me
Wonderful.
Down. I gotta shut this other one off, otherwise we're going to be talking double time here. But I just have to say something about Ray McGovern, okay?
Okay.
He's a veteran, but of a different service. And he's a truthful man, very truthful. He is not a liar, okay? And mm-hmm. he does what people that do not, what is the word that the monkey used? I think it was... something about disassemble, or is it dissembling? There's a difference.
Disassemble, yes, who disassemble.
Yeah. The monkey stood there before the world and said, people that disassemble. And he didn't say dissemblers, okay? Dissemblers right. are liars, okay? And these people mm-hmm. are liars that disassemble. They disassemble the language. They disassemble your patriotism. Turn it into some kind of a Nazism. And
they disassemble human beings, Bob.
I know that, Bob. That's the nature of the beast. It the beast devours human flesh like a meat grinder grinds your burger. For what? For McDonald's? Okay? It just grinds the flesh into something that will be devoured by those that have no more sense than God gave a gently stirred rhubarb stalk. Now, I got that from a friend of ours, a very close friend.
Yes, you did.
Yes. A gently stirred gently stirred rhubarb stock. But Ray McGovern is a very sane man in an insane world, and he faced an an insane man, and he was magnificent. He was. Ray McGovern is magnificent for his courage and for his patriotism. And the Patriot Act is an anti-patriotism document that was on the shelf prior to. Okay. Now, let's talk about bomb racks, okay?
Okay.
Just a little bit, and then I'll let you go. I had a very, very difficult time getting over what I had seen with my own two eyes. Like, Ray McGovern had a difficulty watching these people do what they're doing. And the fear that I have, and the one that, like Linda says, well, we're dead on 666. Or 06, 06, 06, we're all dead. And I said, dear, let's pray that the men that are setting this thing up get, you know, and you did such a wonderful job today, Bob. I just want to thank you for mentioning that fact. But it is not a aberration, and I am not delusional, and I'm not drunk, and I'm not on drugs. I just
I don't think so.
For a fact. I saw it with my own eyes. I talked with senior staff, NCOs, because, see, I was in their pay grade. And I was talking to guys that do the work, not the ones that, you know, kind of, what are you, how do you guys, sit by the pool, wait for the damn paycheck? Okay?
Yeah.
Those guys, you know, not like Bob Kincaid, who works his butt off every day, just try to put a little bit of truth on the airwaves or over the internet or wherever to the world. And to speak truth to power. And, you know, I talked with a friend of ours, and she said, you know, I love this program for one reason. This is not like, okay, get your damn point out and get off the air, because I got points to make. This is what Bob Kincaid built it to be. Conversation radio between the people and all the people. Not just old, beat-up, broke-down warhorse Gunny Bob. But I know these. I've been there. I've seen it. And this is beyond the pale. But Ray McGovern is one of my heroes. And he did tell the truth. Now, peoples, sheeples, wake up. Pull a wool over or wool out of your eyes that they have pulled over your eyes and look at the wolves. They're sitting in your house. They're taking the power that you gave them and they're using it against you, the people, not against our enemies. Our enemies are within. And I'm sorry,
yes,
but it's true.
Now, I believe very much that it's true, Bob, and it's a terrifying concept. Again, you saw a little bit in Ray McGovern today of what the cross-examination, I mean, this was 0.1% of one iota of what the cross-examination in the dock at The Hague should be for Donald Trump.
Should be, but remember this, Bob. Before the Nazis could be brought to The Hague, they had to be defeated. They were defeated by a broken, terrorized, destroyed nation. The people of that nation didn't bring them to The Hague. Their enemies brought them to The Hague. And who are the enemies of this? Not us, the people. not the people of the United States, if they were fully informed of the facts. It's the people of the world that will have their revenge against us. They will have their revenge for the, what, 60-some years of terror and horror that we have brought to this planet?
I understand. Bob, we've got to go, though. We've got we've got the top of the hour on us.
Truth
Thanks so much.
To power, gentlemen. And my heart goes out to your dear and my dear Agnes.
Thank you very kindly, Bob.
I know.
Take care.
She's getting a little bit under the weather, and like Glenda said, you know, moms ain't supposed to get sick. Well, moms do get sick, and then it's, somebody's got to take care of mom too.
And then it's hell among the yearlings for everybody else. I know she's not feeling so good. Bob, thank
love
you so much.
To you and all of yours, and like I said last night in my email, my deepest respect to your father, and my
thank
hope
you.
For his speedy recovery and return to the family. And that is
thank
the truth.
You.
I love you,
I
boy.
Understand.
I love you,
Take
boy.
Take care. We love you too, Bob.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. All right. Quick break. We come back. More of your calls. 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. Who wants to bet what the headlines are? Rumsfeld attacked. Any takers? I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network. I'm not ashamed to say you can't count on me. Cause I'm in a state, and the state of the world just won't tolerate you told anymore. Who else could stand for? I know what I believe. The harder the matter, the harder I go. You stay to look for it for hell.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Having lost in its attempt to destroy union contracts using bankruptcy laws, Comair will be back in negotiations with the Teamsters on May 11th. 1,000 flight attendants at Comair are fighting to defend their families' livelihoods against harsh demands for concessions. The union is trying to work with the airline and has offered a proposal it says will help the airline financially without devastating workers.
After months of strong words on both sides of the bargaining table, pilots at bankrupt Northwest Airlines have agreed to concessions of nearly $385 million. The contract, approved by 63% of the voting members, retains a 23.9% pay cut, but protects the pilots from the outsourcing of jobs. Northwest had requested that a bankruptcy court throw out the contracts of any unions not meeting concession demands. The pilots had threatened to strike if that happened. The flight attendants are scheduled to vote on their contract June 6, and baggage handlers, represented by the International Association of Machinists, are still working out a labor deal.
The United Auto Workers Union has called for a strike vote at Delphi. UAW Delphi locals will complete the vote by May 14th. On May 9th, the bankruptcy judge is scheduled to rule on a motion by Delphi that would give the giant auto parts company the power to throw out its own union contracts rather than having the court make that decision. The UAW and other Delphi unions have said all along that if their contracts are destroyed in the bankruptcy process, a strike is likely, and that could be catastrophic for Delphi and for General Motors. The UAW says what Delphi wants here is illegal. Delphi is pressing its 33,000 union U.S. workers for steep wage and benefits cuts. Delphi is pressing its 33,000 U.S. workers for steep wage and benefits cuts as the workers and their unions try to defend prevailing wages and benefits.
Air Jamaica could be heading for a strike as the airline's more than 300 flight attendants have rejected the most recent contract offer from the airline. Last week, the flight attendants voted that the Bustamante Industrial Trade Union, which represents them, could strike if an agreement with the airline over wages could not be reached. The two sides have been in contract negotiations since last year.
We're here discussing child development with some experts. Tell me the normal development of, say, a two-year-old.
My truck.
So a child that age should know 2 to 4 word phrases. Good. And what about cognitive development? Ah, engaging in pretend play. I see. And what of social
Anna!
Being enthusiastic about the company of other children. All right, thank you.
It's time to change how we view a child's growth. It's not just physical. There are milestones your child should reach in how he plays, learns, speaks, and acts. A delay in any of these areas could be a sign of a developmental problem, even autism. The good news is, the earlier it's recognized, the more you can do to help your child reach his full potential. Talk with a doctor. Visit cdc.gov/act early or call 1-800-CDC-INFO. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Learn the signs. Act early.
Here is today's economic report. If a full-time stay-at-home mother was paid for all of her work, how much should she be paid? A study released by Salary.com on Wednesday suggests $134,121. The survey compiled a list of 10 jobs that most closely fit the role of a mother, including housekeeper, cook, janitor, and psychologist. The average salaries of those jobs were then calculated into the average 91.6 hours per week stay-at-home mothers said they spent working. The most recent U.S. Census reported 5.6 million women playing the role of stay-at-home mom with children under the age of 15.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
When it rains, all my friends go away. God doesn't like me anymore. The wind could come, take your house. Santa won't know where to find me. Mommy scared the sky.
What's going on in the mind of a child who's lived through a hurricane?
You can drown in your bed if you fall asleep.
A lot. Talk to them. Reassure them. We can help. Call 1-800-789-2647 to make sure they move on healthy and happy. That's 1-800-789-2647. Trained and caring people are ready to assist you 24 hours a day. It's confidential and free. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All right, welcome back. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. An hour to go in this Thursday night edition. Another reminder, we will be live tomorrow evening, and we will be starting an hour early at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, broadcasting live from First Fridays in Florence, downtown Florence, Alabama, just for the heck of it, just because it'll be fun to hopefully we will have a good day for this. This may all change if the heavens open up and everything pours down. But, barring that, we'll post an announcement if anything changes, but we anticipate being on air an hour early. Okay? Okay. Now, getting back to this Ray McGovern issue, and moreover, getting back to Paul Pillar, who gave an interview to, oh, somebody help me with my Spanish, L-P-A-I-S, El País, Pace. He went on, he started out by saying that was not the case. I suppose by some definitions that could be called a lie. In other words, trying to prove a link between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein. That was not the case, he was quoted as saying. I suppose by some definitions that could be called a lie. He added, there was an organized campaign of manipulation. That would be the proper way to define it. Pillar said that the decision to invade Iraq was taken as early as the beginning of 2002. That sort of jibes, doesn't it, with everything else we know? It jibes with what Paul O'Neill, former Treasury Secretary, said. It jibes with Richard Clark, who said that 2 days, 3 days, a week after 9/11, President Dimson was pestering him and badgering him to come out and lie and put his own credibility on the line and say that Saddam and Al-Qaeda were somehow connected. Pillar also said the problem was the wider message, the attempt to spread the impression that there was a terrorist alliance between Iraq and Al-Qaeda. The theory of the link interested the government of President George W. Bush because, quote, it was this that most strongly affected public opinion in the United States and which would keep alive the images of September 11, 2001. Quote, the administration's voracious appetite to obtain material about this non-existent alliance cost a great deal of time and work to senior intelligence staff and the most highly experienced analysts in the CIA. 2002. Jim has rejoined us on the phone. Hey, Jim, welcome back. Jim. Have we lost Jim, dear? Okie dokie. So there you have it. Ray McGovern, former CIA, Paul Pillar, former CIA. You heard Rummy say, "I'm not in the intelligence business." Well, Paul Pillar and Ray McGovern damned well were, and they saw it on the inside, and they knew what was being cooked up. They knew the kind of garbage that was filtering out of the White House. And at the Southern Center for International Studies, that hard, cancerous little knot of Bush voters tried to shout him down, tried to shout down Ray McGovern. What did I say before the break? Anybody want to bet on the headline? Rumsfeld attacked by ex-CIA agent? Well, I was off. I was a bubble off plum on that one. Tried CNN.com. Headline, hecklers interrupt Rumsfeld speech. Now, there are people out there listening tonight who have an understanding of comedy and performance and art. And to those people, it will come as no surprise when I remark that a heckler is the guy who sits in the second row at the Wednesday night comedy club on the way out on the circuit and during the comics routine yells, "Your mama! You suck! You're not funny! Don't quit your day job." That's a heckler. That's what heckling sounds like. Sometimes hecklers are armed with, rotten vegetables. That's heckling. To stand up and ask Donald Rumsfeld, who in this photograph, by the way, looks a little bit like Dr. Frank. Frankenstein screaming, "It's alive!" And generally acts with less civility than Dr. Frankenstein. It's Frankenstein. Hecklers interrupt Rumsfeld's speech. No. Ray McGovern is not a heckler. Ray McGovern asked serious adult questions of great import. And Donald Rumsfeld fell back on the traditional Bush administration routine. Why did you lie to us? I didn't lie. Why did you say? I didn't say it. Well, he did. The audio is there. I imagine just because of the high level of professionalism involved in the program, if you follow this program by tuning in to our good friend Mike Malloy, you will hear in conjunction, I would almost bet. You will hear Donald Rumsfeld say, "I didn't say that," and then you will hear Donald Rumsfeld say that. Because he did. We're part of the reality community. We're into the fact-based world. Tinkerbell, while a darling little story, is something for children. And it is, and that level of faith and belief that is not grounded in anything approaching reality is nothing that anyone who dares call himself a grown-up should ever, ever dabble in, because when grown-ups dabble in it, people die. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, phone calls. Lots of them. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path, one that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way or spend your life saying, "What if?" Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
Been to the playground lately? If you have young children, you should take a look. Even though kids have been swinging and climbing and teetering for generations, playgrounds still manage to injure 500,000 kids each year. Check for hard landing surfaces, sharp edges, and broken equipment. Outdoor play is healthy for kids, but a playground that's unsafe and unsupervised can quickly become the pain ground. For more on playground safety, visit orthoinfo.org. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
Work all night and I drink a rum.
Daylight come and we want to home.
Stack banana till the morning come.
Daylight come and we want
to
home.
Come, Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Daylight come and we want to home.
Wait a minute, I was having a karaoke moment. Sorry. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. And to the phones, David has rejoined us from Tennessee. Hey, David, welcome back.
Oh,
Oh, thank you, Bob. So good to get back on for just a little bit. There's just a little aspect of that Rumsfeld tape, which is without question that you'll do another year of broadcast before you ever broadcast anything that's any more obviously a perfect distillation of what the Bush White House is about than that. In that, what, 2 minutes, 4 minutes, maybe? There it is. It's all boiled down to that. And in a very personal way, there's something that I noticed a long, long time ago in my early, early life. I got acquainted with bicycle racing, and I got all fascinated by it. And it's a very earthy sport if you really dig into it. And Italians have these wonderful phrases and sayings, and they don't really translate well. And an Italian racer, when asked, "What did you feel like before you made that last surge?" he'll say, he'll dredge up this old phrase, "My throat was open, my lungs were deep, and my gut was calm." Well, it was the exact opposite of that for old Rummy. You can hear that man's throat close. You can hear him choking as he knew he had to lie, as he knew he had to spread filth. He knew that he was busted. His pants were stent. I mean, it was all right there in front of the world. And never mind the $2,000 suit, the $300 shoes. None of that could stop the fact that he was exposed. You can hear choke. You can hear choke in his own words.
You couldn't. I mean, it would be a bit much for us to hope that he would finally just look up and go, "Okay, you got me."
Oh no!
He had to do it. Yeah. He's caught in it. He can't get away from it. He is, and I mean no. There's no racial epithet involved with this. He is tar babied with all of this. It is stuck all over him. And frankly, hearing him say, "I didn't lie," you know, that's the same thing that the dude with the television set in the alley says after the play, "Son, where'd you get the TV?" "A guy gave it to me."
Yeah, my brother gave it to me. He knew it was total, horrible lies. And he was choking on every, couldn't get it, whether it was anger or fear. It doesn't matter. He knew it, and he was breaking into pieces as I heard him speak.
Oh yeah, it was. He was coming unglued. They're caught. The headlights are on, and they're standing in the middle of the road with a bloody butcher knife. They're
exactly
caught.
And I saw that same MSNBC headline that you saw. There were two protesters that simply wanted to scream, you know, probably ugly words and not make any sense and just create a disruption. So technically, the headline was correct. Protesters, yada yada, Rumsfeld. Oh, yeah, by the way, the best version of that is on Voice of America, believe it or not. Rumsfeld,
no.
I'm serious, Voice of America, because I printed it off. Voice of America, Rumsfeld faces hard questions. That was their headline.
Well, that's that's true.
You think the funding for Voice of America will be cut in the next 30 minutes?
Yeah, somebody just lost a job.
I'm sure. Whoever wrote that headline, as opposed to heckler protesters disrupt Rumsfeld. Well, you know, not much more than he took the stage. Two people screaming rude words were escorted from the building, and potentially if they should have been, I don't know. But McGovern is not a heckler. You're exactly right.
Well, I don't know.
He's an American citizen asking the questions that should be
asked. But he's not just a citizen, David. This is a guy who's in the know. This is a guy who knows how things work over at Langley.
Oh,
just like Paul Pilar is a guy who knows how things work.
He knows where the lever was for the curtain. He knows it all.
Well, it remains to be seen, David, how the American people handle this. I posed the question earlier. What about the people who were sitting there the cheering Rummy? What about them?
Heard you say a cancerous knot of right-wing sycophants or some sort of thing like that. But anyway, yes, that's what they were. It was just supporters, and they tried their best to cheer him on. They tried their best to shout the man down. It didn't work.
Well, I worry about our nation as long as we've got people who are willing to blithely go along and murder other people for goals that aren't even defined. At that point, it becomes psychopathy. It's, crazy, real woohoo, crazy. Dangerous, don't let them run with the scissors crazy.
I had only heard the words. I had only heard a third person's description of it. But now that I've heard how Rumsfeld was humiliated and belittled for good reason and taken apart and essentially shown the door in a debating sense, I say again, there may be one or two more appearances like that by somebody within the Bushista regime, and this is all going to stop because they can't stand up to America speaking to them and demanding an answer, because they either answer and they're damned, or they don't answer and they're damned. So those sorts of possibilities right now is an odd, small, glorious, wonderful window, and we better look through it while we can, because...
Well, and not just look through it, David. We'd better pray God that somewhere in Congress there are a few Democrats who are willing to press home the attack while that window is open. This is, it's not a window. It's a swordsman with his guard down.
An unnamed Republican told National Public Radio sometime in the last 48 hours, and I quote the NPR reporter, based on what we're doing right now and how we're doing it, if the Democrats can't take back the House now, they'll never take it back. But the good news is, it's the Democrats trying to take it back.
Oh God!
So that's how much confidence they have in themselves, and that's what we—that's the perfect locker room. That's the perfect bulletin board quote for all us Democrats. Before kickoff, we ought to be reading that. They don't think we can vote them out. Now we need to outvote them by 5 or 6% more than it should take, because there's Diebold machines around the nation. We all do
right. Which incidentally melted down in glorious fashion in Ohio just a couple of days ago.
Well,
it was amazing. It got so bad that one elderly lady destroyed two Diebold machines in frustration. Just destroyed them. There's a little hope here and there.
Flowers. Gee whiz. Did I send flowers? Maybe a box of chocolate?
Let's find out who she is and give her a hand. David, thanks so much. We got to hit our break.
The electoral version of Where's the Beef?
That's exactly it.
And
have a good evening, David.
And Debo lost a couple. That's perfect. Bye, Bob.
Bye now. All right, we're going to take a quick break and then come back for more phone calls. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
How can we help prepare our kids for the future? Hi, this is Roger McGuinn. These days, our children face challenges unimaginable to us only a generation ago. We adults need to help our kids find something in school that really sparks their interest and keeps them involved. If that something happens to be music, the child will benefit in so many ways. Playing music in school is a great way to make friends. Studies are showing that kids involved in music are less likely to get into trouble. And kids who studied music find science and math easier to grasp. They tend to score higher on SATs. It has something to do with something called spatial IQ. So get your kids involved with school music. It's a great way to help prepare them for life.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
Hello, may I help you?
Hello, can I ask you a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing, it's not an option, it's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Tonight's Thursday night edition of Head On with me, Bob Kincaid, and a host of incredibly intelligent folks who call in and folks who don't necessarily call in, but sit around and be quietly intelligent. That's the cool thing about liberal, progressive, Democrat-oriented conversation radio. You get to deal with the smart folks. It wouldn't be worth doing if that wasn't the case. Let's go to the phones. Wayne is with us. Hey, Wayne, you're Head On.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
I'm doing good. You?
I'm doing all right. Listen, I kind of watched that Rumsfeld thing.
Yeah?
I don't know. Is he like George Bush? He doesn't read papers and stuff like that. Didn't anybody inform him that Colin Powell admitted that he knew that when he went before the UN that everything he was telling them was a lie? Or did I just imagine that?
Then it was a mass hallucination, because I hallucinated that too, Wayne.
Okay, I mean, I think I read that online not too long ago, that Colin Powell said he knew that everything he set up there was a bunch of baloney. And Rumsfeld has the guts to quote him today, saying that, you know, Colin Powell believed he was telling the truth, you know.
Well,
Colin
I mean,
Powell
I mean,
knew he wasn't.
Am I just off the deep end? I mean, do you get what I'm talking about with this awful word believe?
Yes, I do.
I mean, they come out and they say, well,
it's
I believed.
It's a great scapegoat. You know, I believed. Therefore, it's okay. Whatever lie I told is okay because I believed my lie.
Exactly.
And, you know, I don't know. It's Rummy had
a... Well, but...
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I said Rummy had a bad day today, and I hope he has many more to come. So,
I don't know. Honest to God, Wayne, I don't know how he sleeps.
I don't either. I truly don't, you know.
I mean, I don't know why I don't know how the guy manages to not have a beard down to his knees. Because if I had done to 100,000 people plus 2,400 American families plus 18,000 other Americans and their families, I couldn't stand to look in the mirror and shave.
No, that's exactly right. You know, these people.
I'd have a beard like Methuselah.
These people have no soul. I mean, it's well, it's unbelievable, but they are. You know, it's a very scary time because we have to, something has to be done to keep these people from, I don't know who mentioned October surprise or whatever, but you know they have plans for that. And
yes.
They have to be stopped. They have to be stopped. And I have faith in the American people. I think what happened today is evidence that, you know, people are waking up. And at that news conference today, even though they had most of the room full of those 32 percenters, a couple of real people snuck in there, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, well, I told you before, if Fox News says it's 32, I'm betting on 24.
I know what you mean.
You know. Go ahead.
No, please.
Well, I don't know. I was just keep on talking, but, you know, let me hear what you got to say.
Well, no, there was an interesting story out there about a study of Fox News that was released in the last day or so that said that Fox News and their spin probably accounted for 8,000 to 10,000 extra votes for George Bush in Florida in 2000.
Duh.
Yeah, this
they
we get in 2006. Yeah.
I mean, God. You know, they confirmed it with Tony Snow. You know, what did I read? You know, Fox News and the White House finally admit merger.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
so.
I love this. I love this memo. I mean, can you believe it? Have you seen this, Wayne? I was talking about this earlier in the program.
About the 2002 election?
No. It's Tony Snow's first memo. It was leaked to ABC News by a Republican who doesn't like Tony Snow.
Oh, yeah.
He writes this memo to Josh Bolton, Dan Bartlett, and Nicole Wallace, and in it he says, I'm going to keep the spotlight where it belongs, on the president. I'm the gigolo, paid to meet specific needs and then leave. I'm the gigolo?
Hey. Just goes to show, if you pay somebody enough money, they'll admit to anything.
Well, I mean, you know, we've been talking all along about Scott McClellan and Jeff Gannon or Jimmy Dale Guckert or whatever the hell his name was, and talking about male prostitutes in the White House, and here's a guy. He's the gigolo? What is it? Who's he pimping?
I think the answer to that is very clear, isn't it?
Unfortunately so.
Yes. You know, I don't know. I watched something on news tonight. I was going to call in because who's Brian Williams with? Which one of the phony?
NBC.
Huh?
NBC.
Okay. You know, well, they showed the clip and they identified the guy as the ex-CIA analyst, you know. And in the beginning of the show, it didn't seem like that was apparent, and I wanted to call you and say that, but that's already been exposed. But this guy knows what he's talking about. I mean, he wasn't talking to some dummy on the street, man.
No,
this guy knows what these people have done. And, you know, and now...
Yeah, this wasn't some real estate salesman from North Carolina.
Exactly. Who looked like a Norman Rockwell guy. Although I admire the man for standing up and saying what he said. But this guy today knows the facts. That's his business.
Right.
Knowing the facts and how to distort them. Only today he just laid out the facts. with no distortion. This is the truth. This
well, you know,
said.
Yeah. You know, thank God he wasn't asking that of Cheney, because Cheney would have shot him in the face.
Exactly. And had him removed. Then they would have shot him in the face, probably. But
you hold him, boys. I'll shoot him.
There you go. Let me get my gun. he probably got it in a car or somewhere. I don't know. But now there's who was the guy that Cunningham? Duke
yeah.
Cunningham?
You yeah, know, Randy Duke Cunningham.
Who was it?
Randy Duke Cunningham.
Randy Duke Cunningham, yeah. I guess he's rolling over big time and exposing all these things that went on with these defense contractors. And the Watergate Hotel is back in the news.
Oh, yeah, it's back in business in a big way.
Yeah, they are. It's great, man. You know, history repeats itself.
Well, and apparently Randy Duke Cunningham, his handler, the guy who was paying him off, what's his name, Mitchell Wade, has now testified or given.
Or what? I lost you. Bobby. Ah, I don't know what happened.
Well, let's see. He must have just wanted to turn it over to me, I guess.
I don't know what that's probably was his intentions, I'm sure.
Well, you know, he loves me so much.
Well, and that he should do.
He was waiting for me to play the ever-known clip, Good Morning, Mr. Cunningham.
Oh, okay.
That's what it is. Poor little fella.
Oh, well.
And I'm just not fast enough on the draw anymore.
Well, you know, I understand you guys were up very late last night.
Well, we burnt some midnight oil, but there was some homework and things to be done, too. And
well, you guys have done a wonderful job, man.
Thank you.
Wonderful job. So
we enjoy it.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you did.
I'm getting too old for burning the midnight oil, though.
Hey, talk to me about it. Talk to me about it. But listen, man, I don't know what's going on.
I'll find him.
Okay.
He can't be far away.
Okay.
I can track him down in a heartbeat.
Well, go for it, girl.
I think I did.
Okay.
All right.
I'm going to get off here.
Thanks, Wade.
Good night, man.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we're still looking for Bob. Are you there, Bob? Well, we have thunderstorms coming through. So there may be a problem, so we will just go ahead and take our break a little early, and then we'll come back and we'll go to the phones, and you will be back with Head On in just a couple of seconds.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
She had to go like 3 miles out of her way because Bush was there visiting. And he had his whole entourage and Secret Service, and they were blocking off the road, the highway that she has to take to get to work.
The Bush got you down? Let Grace and Rama Homebodies get you up every Sunday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern right here on the Head On Radio Network and homebodies.ramabahama.net. We'll trim the mess for you.
Welcome back to the last few minutes ahead on, and we're going to go back to the phones. We've got Chris on the line. Hey, Chris.
Hey.
How you doing?
Pretty good.
Everything okay down your way?
Yeah, pretty good.
So what's new?
Not a whole lot. Am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Okay, good.
I get to talk to you.
Oh, okay, cool. I was wondering. I was wondering if the show's been on the air long enough to talk about the seven dirty words.
Can't talk about dirty words.
Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Gonzalez, Chertoff, Condi, and Mineta?
Oh, that works for me.
Okay. All right. Those are the words.
Those are the words.
Why not? No, I've been waiting for a while. I was just going to hang up and call back another night, but I understand.
Well, don't do that.
Okay. Well, I understand how technical difficulties can take a hold of you.
Yeah, I wish I knew what this one was. But, you know, we made it through the better part of the night. How you doing, Chris?
Pretty good. I was asking dear Agnes if we could talk about the seven dirty words.
It depends on which ones you're talking about.
Bush, Cheney, Rice, Rumsfeld, Chertoff, you know.
Yeah, the dirtiest words in the English language right now, without a doubt.
Did you see what McCain said about the oil industry?
No, I missed that.
Outside of satanic cults, these people had the worst PR in the world.
but he's still, you know, he's still missing the pitch. It's not their PR that's satanic.
He's a little jello shot boy. What does he know?
Well, yeah.
He can fit him in. Oh, I'm not going to go there.
leave it alone, Chris. Leave it alone.
But, no, I haven't called in a little while, and I wanted to call in. See how everybody was doing.
Yeah, we're getting along. We've got things largely fixed, I think. Obviously, this must be a problem on my end. I don't know what it is.
Well,
but we're going to find it, and we're going to fix it.
You're in the black hole that is Florence. You know,
this is a beautiful place. What are you talking about, Chris?
No. Now, wait a minute. We miss all the really bad weather, but we get all the quirky things of non-nature around here.
Yeah, what, electrons don't behave the right way around here? Well, then again, what, 18 miles from Browns Ferry nuclear plant?
Yeah, absolutely.
I got whacked by a gamma ray. That's what it was.
Exactly, yeah. I can name a few more people you're close to that everybody down here would know. You're not wrong. You're not far from Billy Ray Warren, so, you know, that's bad enough. Everybody that's listening in Alabama, go Florence, Alabama, go tell Billy Ray what I said. I know exactly where he lives. Boy, he is to the right wing what Manson was to celebrity crime interviews. That man is just...
That's harsh.
He's awful. You know who I'm talking about.
Oh, yes, I know who you're talking about.
He's awful.
Well, I'm not kidding. I'm planning on being out on the streets of Florence tomorrow afternoon, so maybe you can run by, Chris.
All righty, let me know. You know the number and everything, so.
Yeah, with any luck, I'm going to be out in front of Shaolin Computers.
Okay.
On Court Street in downtown Florence.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm going to, you know, tomorrow's First Fridays in Florence, so we're going to try to take this puppy on the road.
Well, good. One of the last Fridays in Florence was tornadoes, and that was a bad one.
Well, then we'll probably get frogs and locusts tomorrow.
Okie doke.
Yeah, the biblical stuff. Chris, we got to roll on out of here. I'm sorry for the time delay and everything, but
hey, it's okay.
All right, thanks,
all
man.
For the calls, man. Take care.
All right, take care. Bye now. So I got back in time to say goodnight. We're going to fix all this. But I am very pleased with the way things worked out today. A flawless showcase edition of Head On this afternoon with Bruce and me and Dr. Bill O'Brien. And a very enjoyable show, at least from my standpoint. I hope it was from yours, this evening. The show tonight, of course, was produced by my lovely wife, Agnes, who is not feeling well. And who is exhausted, and whom I hope will be knocking off and getting some sleep and drinking orange juice and chicken soup and all, all that kind of get well stuff. Brian Reznor announces Randy Kerbway as our engineer. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computers will probably be getting a phone call in a little bit. And Peter, I broke it. Take it easy, Peter. Don't worry about it. We'll get this licked. The show is brought to you every night. Every show on the Head On Radio Network is brought to you each and every time by the commitment of the head of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. And by supporting the growth of the Head On Radio Network, they're helping save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.
Sensation that